Oh, what's up, Atlanta? This is, I think, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, last time I checked. Although, it might be your home for Olympic coverage 24-7, at least anytime when our buddy Abe Gordon is on the air here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So, E, I'm just confirming we are still your home of Atlanta sports, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Of course I say that tongue-in-cheek, but the Olympics are going on. They are very important. I am glad that Abe is so damn passionate about swimming and pole vaulting and water polo and equestrian and all the other fun sports that are taking place now. Shikari Richardson did just run. I believe she came in second place.
That is correct.
It looks like. I believe Team Jamaica captured the gold.
Well, that first of all, that's only the semifinals.
Okay, so that's semifinals.
Yep, and that
okay,
was a young so lady from St. Lucia.
St. Lucia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I got the TVs here, but they're not big enough for me to see the emblems of the women that are running. And damn, it was close. But Shikari did not take first in the heat. So we shall see what happens from there. Again, if you want wall to wall Olympic coverage, I'm not your guy. I'm just going to say that, but, you know, it's fun, it's entertaining, the pageantry, the things that everybody likes about it, I like that too, just not to a, again, like it sounded like Abe was breaking down water polo like it's the NFC Championship game and the Falcons are back in it for the first time since 2016, so we are going to get into the Falcons in just a second. I do have a question that I want to ask everybody at 404-726-0929, 404-726-0929. We got a lot to talk about because the NFL is getting back in swing, and there's a lot going on at camps, not just here in Atlanta. We'll make sure we cover all of that with our buddy Joe DeLeon from the Believe Network. He's going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour. I got Joe Patrick coming up at the end of this hour to recap everything that happened last night. E, this was funny. So they put us up yesterday for Dukes and Bell in a bougie on-field suite, which is amazing. Like the Maybach suite, to be specific, or Maybach before you come after me on Twitter at C Thomas Radio. And it was great. And it was, you know, for the first couple hours of the show, there was really nobody there. They were just starting to set up. We had an amazing view of the field. They were great with the hospitality. We got to try the $20 board challenge, which I'll get into later in the show. And then practice started, E, and there was a little problem. Your boy couldn't see anything because 6'5" linemen were lining up 15 feet in front of our face, and I couldn't see the plays. So just like everybody else in the stands, I was using the big board up on top to actually see what was going on in practice. So as great as the luxury suite was, it actually wound up being a detriment to our sight lines because they had all of the reserve linemen standing right in front of us. So your boy, who's 5'9 on a good day, is not seeing over, you know, 6'6" Caleb McGarry. That's just not happening.
You know, it's funny you would bring it up, though. I remember when, I think Jerry's World was the first NFL stadium to introduce the field level suite. That's what they call them. You're on the field level.
Yep.
But you always got to say, you know, the whole reason that stadiums, movie theaters are built on an upward angle is so that you can look down and see the broad view. When you're on the field level, okay, just like when you're there as a sports reporter on the field level, your view is obscured. You know what I'm saying? If you're paying that kind of money to sit at that level, you're not there to watch the game. You're not, because you really can't see much unless it's right in front of you for that very moment.
Yeah.
You know, so
you can't see. I mean, unless you're, you know, Mike Johnson size.
Exactly.
You can't see anything.
But even that, you know, when you filled a stadium with 90,000 and now you got 100 people on the sideline, that's, like I said, you're close. You can hear it. And you can hear the crack of the pads in the helmet, but you really can't see as much as you think because it's a lot of obstructions to your view.
Now, warm-ups were amazing.
Right.
Because nobody's on the sidelines
yet.
So I saw everything. Mm-hmm. I saw Kirk warming up. I saw Taylor Heinicke warming up, Michael Penix. I saw all the tight ends catching balls. I saw everybody doing their thing on the lines. So that was really awesome. But once the actual practice started, I was like, hello?
Yeah, can I get up to the 100 level? Can I get up to the 200 level?
Yeah, I need a pair of binoculars here in the field level suite. But all right, so here's what I want to talk about today. The Atlanta Falcons offense, right? Because I will say this, in all seriousness, from everything I've seen so far in practice, they look great. They really do. I mean, I can't even, you know, pretend at this point. Kirk looks incredible. The accuracy's there. Every throw is just right. And it's so, I talked about it earlier this week. It's so just amazing to watch after what we've seen the past couple of years. Penix, I know I was listening to Abe, and he said Penix has looked inconsistent. I would disagree slightly. I mean, he's a rookie. Like, can we cut him some slack? Like, what do you expect him to be like Kirk and go 15 for 16 in practice? No, he's going to miss some throws. Dude has a rocket launcher. That ball comes in 1,000 miles an hour. And when he's on, it's just as accurate as Kirk. Now he's just not on as much. So Drake London looks great.
Yeah, and a lot of that will come with experience. You know, a lot of the guys who come in this league with these cannons, they got to learn touch. They got to learn timing. And hopefully that takes work.
Yeah, he's got to put it in. He showed that in college, and it's just now about getting it to an NFL level. He showed it in college. Like, he had one, maybe the best deep ball in the country last year outside of Jaden Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just got to show that at the NFL level. So with all of that said, Drake London looks great. Kyle Pitts looks like he's back to 100%. Darnell Mooney, what's up, Darnell? Out there making catches. Even guys like Rondale Moore and Ray McLeod are getting in the mix. So with that said, here's my question, and we'll talk about this throughout the full 4 hours today on the show. We'll sort of weave in the topic of the day as we do here on Saturdays on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The Atlanta Falcons offense will need to run through who or what to be the best version of itself. Because if you're telling me, you know, I hear John Fricke, he expects the offense to be a full touchdown better than it was last year. Okay, if that's going to happen, who is the focal point of the offense this season? Or what? Because I posed the question as well at C. Thomas Radio. I got a couple of answers. Give me a follow and respond. If you don't, I'll hit you back. We can chat all things Atlanta sports. Somebody said red zone efficiency, and that's a great answer because Mike Bell's famous quote is the red zone for the Atlanta Falcons is the dead zone, and he's not wrong. That's been a major struggle the last couple of years. So improving on red zone efficiency percentage would certainly be something that you can offer to the table. But if you want to simply go with a player, you can make an argument for Drake London, wide receiver one. Yet to have a 1,000-yard season. Does he get over that hump? Is he catching 80 balls from Kirk this year? Does he need to be the focal point? Bijan Robinson, he didn't have 1,000 yards rushing last year. Does he get over that mark? Does he catch 40, 50 balls out of the backfield too? Is it as simple as, hey, run the offense through your best player? Quarterback is the obvious answer. If you want to make the case for Kirk Cousins, that's fine. I just think that's a little too on the nose. But if you really do feel like that's your answer, I'm not going to stop you. How about Kyle Pitts? You know, if he's back, I was just saying this with Abe off the air, I really feel like he opens up the rest of the offense. Because if Kyle Pitts is cooking, you got to account for him over the middle. You got to account for him as a deep threat. And if he's running deep and he's at full speed, you got to treat him like a wide receiver one, right? You got to make it so that you're accounting for him in the same way that you account for Drake. If that's the type of season he's going to have. I know Abe was saying to me that he feels strongly that Zach Robinson needs to have a breakout campaign in year one. I don't disagree because he needs to be able to put all those pieces in place. And he's going to start the season, man. You guys know Steelers, Eagles, Chiefs. Those are all three really good defenses. He's going to need to put up a game plan where his offense is going to be able to execute. So, again, the question at 404-726-0929, the Falcons' offense will need to run through who or what to have its most success in 2024. The offensive line is also definitely on the table, like, because we know if they don't pass block, man, it's going to be a long year because Kirk is going to be running for his life, and that's not his skill set. And we haven't seen in the past that this Atlanta Falcons offense is equipped to pass block especially well. And they brought in a quarterback who needs an offensive line that's going to do that. So if you want to say the offensive line, specifically Caleb McGarry, I think would be the guy that would get the most heat there because he's been especially deficient. As good of a run blocker as he is, he's almost equally deficient as a pass blocker. And we just know that about him. And so it's big on him to step up this year. All right, let's take one call before we catch our first break. 404-726-0929. Griffin is in Rex, Georgia. Griffin, the Atlanta Falcons offense will need to run through who or what to be the best version of itself in 2024?
Bro, I love you guys. Thanks for having me on. It's got to be Kyle Pitts, man, because every dominant offense in the past, you know, 5-10 years has had a beast tight end. You got Gronk for the Patriots. You got Kelce for the Chiefs. And then even when the Eagles won, you know, they had a beast tight end, you know. So I really think it's important for Pitts to just catch on fire and have a monster season, bro.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And you know what? I think that's where I'm leaning. Because we talked about the offense a few months ago on the show, and I was asking who is, you know, who do you feel like is the most important piece on offense? And I feel like the answer is still Kyle Pitts a few months later. You know, asking a little bit more specifically about who the offense needs to run through, who needs to be the A player on a game plan on a week-to-week basis for this team to be successful, I'm not sure if my answer's changed. You know, we've done these exercises throughout the offseason, and I've sort of marked, you know, when we talked about what and what developments have taken place since then, and I don't think there's anything that's happened this dramatically to change my mind off of Kyle Pitts, so I think I need to agree with our first caller there. And that's a good point. You know, you think of the elite offenses in the league, Travis Kelce, George Kittle. You think of all those guys. The caller mentioned Gronk before him. Tony Gonzalez, who remembers that in Atlanta? Pretty good when he wanted to show up, right? I mean, so that's what we're talking about here. 404-726-0929. When we get back, we'll take more of your calls before Joe Patrick joins us at 2:40. Again, question of the day. The Falcons offense will need to run through who or what to be its best version in 2024. And I encourage you guys to think outside of the box a little bit. Again, I had a tweeter who sent in at C. Thomas Radio that he feels like it's red zone efficiency. I love that answer. I think that's a really smart answer. The Falcons have not been a good red zone team. They need to convert. I want to see less coup in 2024, although we know how good he is, too. All right, your call's coming up again, 404-726-0929. The Falcons offense will need to run through who or what to be the best version of itself in 2024. Back with you here on a Saturday afternoon, a steamy Saturday afternoon here in the A on Sports Radio 92.9. The game, Chris Thomas with you for the full four, taking you up until 6 o'clock. Our buddy Caleb Johnson comes your way then, and I will be chatting with him. I wanted to get his take on a couple of things. U.S. men's and women's basketball coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Joe Patrick joins us next, but right now we're talking about the Atlanta Falcons because there's this theory, right? Like, how much better PPG points per game is the Atlanta Falcons offense going to be in 2024? And I think you can make the argument that if all things are firing, that it could be much better. But just how much better? Well, that depends on which route you take, right? Who is the offense going to run through in 2024? That is my question to you today. Taking your phone calls right now at 404-726-0929. And I like the creative options. Abe said Zach Robinson when we were chatting right before he left. I had a tweeter that said red zone efficiency. Love that answer as well. But of course, there are other ones that are obvious. Our first caller of the day said Kyle Pitts. And I tend to agree. If Kyle Pitts is a threat over the middle and deep down the field, then you know what? You're in pretty good shape. That defense is going to have to account for Kyle Pitts in the same way they're going to have to account for Drake London. So then essentially, Kyle Pitts becomes your wide receiver number two. And a de facto, if you want to call him this, like a wide receiver, what, 1B, somewhere along those lines? He could be 1A if he's living up to that potential that he showed in his rookie year. So that's the question today, 404-726-0929. We're taking your calls. Let's start with Yo in the A. Yo.
What's going on, Turtle? How you doing, sir?
What's up, man? What do you got for me?
Man, I am sitting here, and after watching that practice last night, there was like one takeaway. Well, actually, there's two. That defensive line is legit. The defensive line, first and second string, absolutely legit. But what I also noticed was there were a lot of plays on the offensive side where they faked the handoff. And my thought process is this. Bijan Robinson is going to be the superstar that we expected him to be when we drafted him. Between Bijan and Tyler Algier, that running game is going to be what takes us to, and I've said it once before, the Super Bowl. Because if you can play action, because when you actually do it, the guy who can hand the ball off to is going to get, you know, 7-8 yards per clip. Or take it to the house, because, you know, Bijan does that and Algier does that. So I'm thinking that we're going to be way more dominant in the run game than what everybody thinks. Everybody wants to sit around like we're going to toss the ball around a yard, this, that, and the other. Yeah, we are. But it's going to be because those linebackers have to cheat up. Kyle Pitts is going to be wide open over the middle. We're going to have Drake London being able to do seam routes. We're going to have all that stuff, but it's going to be because we're going to have a 2,000-yard rusher this year, and I think it's 2,000? Going to be Bijan.
2,000, yeah. Yo. That's
listen.
Oh, my
listen,
goodness.
I don't want to be rude because I love my turtle, right? But let's just be honest. When we drafted Bijan Robinson, we all thought the same thing. That kid, if you fed him the ball, would be superstar, right? Now, I don't care about a Madden rating. What I care about is NFL games. And I'm telling you, with that offensive line that is already a pass-blocking line that made Tyler Algier a 1,000-yard rusher in his rookie year, when they actually decide that, hey, we're up by 14 points and we're just going to feed the rock inside, those guys are going to freaking eat. So I'm saying, and I told Abe last night, and I'm telling you right now, I expect the Atlanta Falcons to be in the Super Bowl, and it's going to be because of the running game. It's not going to just be the passing. Kirk is freaking awesome. I watched him yesterday, right? But we're going to take that pressure off of him. And when he comes up the pass, it's going to be one-on-one coverage down the field against our studs, because everybody's going to be afraid that we're going to hand that ball to Bijan, that we're going to hand that ball to Algier. And by the way, that kid Washington, that dude did something too.
Now,
Curry, I love you, brother.
Appreciate you, yo. Yeah, man. Now, he just hit on something at the end of that call right there, E. I've gotten to see Casey Washington up close and personal now. That dude is a stud. I would not – that's my sleeper. I said this on 92.9 The Game tonight when I was doing the show this week. Number 82, look out for this kid. He's a stud. He's got a NFL-ready body right now. And that dude just catches footballs. Like, he looks incredible to me so far. That's a guy for me that – when you talk about when you need a spark on your offense, like, he could take away, in my opinion, what Kadarius Hodges' role has been the last couple of years, which is a guy that when you need a spark, a little change of pace, you put him in. Casey Washington, man, telling you what, that kid is a STUD with an exclamation point at the end of it. In terms of your other points, Mr. Yo, E, 2,000 yards, that's a little rich for my blood, not going to lie.
2,000 all-purpose, maybe. But straight even as rushing, I can take 1,300 rushing and another 600-700 receiving. Give me 2,000
yeah.
all-purpose. Give me 2,000 all-purpose.
But I want Algier in this offense, man.
He'll still be in this offense.
Yeah.
All right, let me ask you a question, okay, yeah. Before we get to our next caller.
Yep.
What should the Falcons' rushing offense average per game?
It's a good question. Perhaps a great question.
Okay, think about that. Get to your next call, and then we can talk about that more.
All right. 404-726-0929. While I ponder, E, who do we got? Who's next up? All right, let's go to Eddie, 404-726-0929. Eddie, you're in the game. Go ahead. What do you think? The most important...
Hey, what's up, man? So I know you said this is the easy answer, but the easy answer is the right answer for a reason. The narrative the past couple years is that all these offensive studs that we've drafted haven't reached their potential because we haven't had a quarterback. So that's the answer. It's got to be Kurt getting these guys the ball. Now, as far as who I think that's going to benefit the most, I think the first caller was right. I think it's going to be Kyle Pitts. Looking at how Kurt was with Tyler Hockenson. So I think that's important. I also am really hoping, based on the fact that we got Kurt, that we see a big leap from Matthew Bergeron this year and that Caleb McGarry is a little bit more solid in pass protection.
Well, but Eddie, let me ask you this, because if a lot of, so our last caller, Yo, was talking about the run game, and then E just asked me how many yards a game should the Falcons average in the run game. Could you make the argument, and I think you can, that because the run game is going to be used so heavily that Kirk's numbers might actually be down from what he usually does, and not because he's not playing well, but because he doesn't have to do as much?
I think that's possible, but I think if he's running the offense efficiently, I don't think that's as big a deal. I think the problem is, I don't care what your numbers are, until you run the offense, and the last guy is putting it. So,
no, you're right about that. Eddie, appreciate the phone call. You are certainly right about that. As a matter of fact, the last two guys couldn't run the offense. Three, if you want to count Taylor Heineke in on that. And I think that's a real possibility, though, that, you know, if Bijan is going to have this all-pro season that you guys think he might, and he definitely could, that means Kirk's not going to be throwing for 4,500 yards because that's not going to be what the game plan is. That means Kirk is probably not throwing for more than 30 touchdowns, I would say. Because if Bijan's going to have, you know, 12 on the ground, 5 through the air, Algier's going to have, what, 4 or 5 on the ground? Like, there's only so many touchdowns to go around, right? So you're taking Bijan Robinson, if he's going to have, you know, again, 1,300 or 1,400 yards on the ground, 500 or 600 yards in the air, 10, 11 rushing touchdowns, 5 or 6 receiving touchdowns. Algier's going to have what? If I said 550, 600 yards? Yeah, he's shaking his head in approval. That sounds about right. Again, maybe 4 or 5 rushing touchdowns. Guys, that's a lot of yards. That's a lot of yards. And that's a lot of touchdowns. So I don't think Kirk's going to be slinging it 35, 40 times a game. If that's going to be the plan. And what did Raheem Morris say at the beginning of the year, right? We're going to use Bijan Robinson a lot. And I expect them to do that. So, again, the question to you guys today is at 404-726-0929. Bunch of good answers so far. The Falcons' offense will need to run through who or what to have its most success in 2024. We've gotten votes for Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson, Kirk Cousins, the offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, from our buddy Abe. We got a really good tweet talking about the red zone efficiency. So a lot of different ways you can go with this. I think the offensive line is certainly an option there from what they need to do in terms of pass blocking. But let me just say this too. He asked a really good question before. How many yards a game should the Falcons average rushing? Oof. If Bijan averages, is he going to average 100 yards a game?
Doesn't need to, right?
Because
nope.
That would put him at 1,700 for the season, exactly. And I don't think he's going to get that much. Mm-hmm. So if he averages 75 yards a game,
okay,
Algier averages 45, 50? Are we going to use him that much even? 35, 40? Is that what we're looking at? So you combine those two, 120 yards a game.
Okay. Last year they averaged 127.
Okay.
Let's say it comes down a little bit. Let's go with 120. Over a 17 game season, 120 per game gets you to, as a team, just over 2,000 yards.
Okay.
So if you do that.
Damn, I was right there.
Right there.
How about
right?
that?
You predicted this, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you get into 2,000 rushing as a team, 1,250. 550, and the rookie gets 200. two
and then you sprinkle in like a Jace McClellan.
Right, that's the rookie. Jace McClellan, the rookie.
Or here, yeah, or yeah, maybe exactly. A Carlos Washington there. Yeah, okay. You know what? We figured it out.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. So I'll take between 1,200 and 300, 1,200, 1,300 for Bijan, 500 to 700 anywhere, 200 to 300 to mix in with the other guys. Now you've got 2,000 yards, and that's not that much, okay? Now your offense, now as an offense, if you're averaging, you should average anywhere from 320 to 360 yards per game.
Yeah.
And that's on the low end.
Yeah, because that's averaging, that says Kirk is only throwing for like 260,
270.
And which we know he can do a lot
exactly
more than that.
And what is that over a 17-game season?
Yeah, if that goes to Kirk, I mean, he should be between his average for the last five seasons is about 4,000 a season.
260.
Yeah.
Per game over 17 game season, 4,400 yards.
There it is.
We're done.
Ladies and gentlemen,
drop the mic.
Your 2024 Atlanta Falcons offense presented by Eric Slaughter and Chris Thomas. We literally just did the math right there in front of your eyes. All right, great job. Damn. How about that? It's going to be a good show. 404-726-0929. We'll chat with our buddy Joe Patrick next. He was at practice last night. What were the highs? What were the lows? And what can we expect in Miami this week coming up? Man, can't believe we just did that. Good stuff. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. He is the busiest man at the radio station right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas with you until 6 o'clock. Let's waste no time and head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and welcome in Joe Patrick, fresh off of a rare night session for the Atlanta Falcons, this time at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Joe, how we doing? You get enough sleep last night?
Oh, yeah, no, last night was great. You know, it was great to just kind of be out there in front of the fans again. Obviously, they did the thing at secondary high school a week ago or so, but just always really nice for there to be that kind of festive atmosphere that you expect at training camp that you normally get at Flowery Branch, but for obvious reasons that we've talked about, they weren't able to do that this year. So just, like, really special to be able to, like, from my perspective, you know, I'm at these practices where it's quote-unquote silent practices, as some of the players have called them, and then to, like, come out and see the fans respond to them and the players responding to the fans, especially afterwards. It just makes you feel good to kind of see that interaction taking place. So it was a really good night overall.
Okay, so I need your help because, as I explained in the first segment of the show, Joe, I couldn't see a damn thing yesterday. Because although although the Maybach suite was incredible and the food and the $20 challenge, which was amazing, all the linemen were standing right in front of where we were sitting, so I was relying on the big board to watch the plays and trying to do the radio show at the same time. So give us a nice, chunky rundown of what happened last night.
Yeah, Chris, you know, it's funny because I was joking with some media members saying that it was nice to actually watch a practice from the press box because not only do you get the view and everything, but you can't get blocked by the players, which they tend to do sometimes at Flowery Branch, you know, when we're standing there on the field and the linemen will get in the way. So I feel your pain there. But overall, I think it was about as entertaining of a practice as you could wish to see, especially kind of in that venue where you've got a lot of fans there, because what they were doing, they did a pretty, you know, short individual session and group session. And then they were in basically 11-on-11 scrimmage for what seemed to be a solid, like, hour and a half, I would say, last night. It was impressive just how long the practice just kept going. They kept on letting these guys run out there. And you got to see, you know, the one offense versus the two defense, then the one defense versus the two offense, and then the one offense versus the one defense. So I think you got a little bit of everything where you got to see some of the reserve guys, you know, the rookies and those types, you know, take on, you know, some higher level competition on the other side. And then you got to see, you know, what both sides kind of have with the starting units going up against each other. And, you know, I think it's one of those deals with Kirk Cousins when he comes into this team. He's like, there's no doubt about that he's giving the defense a lot better looks, I think, preparing them. And I think the defense just preparing for a Zach Robinson offense that really gets them ready to go, I think, better than just about anybody else. And again, when you go down to joint practices next week in Miami, you get to go against Mike McDaniel and see a lot of that similar kind of very modern, fast, you know, style of offense that seems to be dominant around the league so far. So a really productive night, I think, last night.
Yeah, and we know Tyreek Hill will be fired up because he just got his bag. We'll get more into that coming up in the next segment. But, Joe, talk to me about the cornerback battle, because it seems like it's Mike Hughes' job to lose for now, but I think Clark has held up his own as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and something that I said, and I know we've talked about it, Chris, but heading into this training camp, I always thought that Clark Phillips is the kind of player where, you know, just by first glance, like literally visually, you just see how small he is, and it might get a coach kind of make them hesitant to, you know, lock him in as a starting cornerback in the NFL. But he's also the kind of player who's going to make plays over the course of training camp. And he's, you know, that's kind of his specialty when he was at Utah. Such a playmaker, such an ability to, you know, sit in those zone coverages with his eyes on the quarterback and be able to jump routes and just use his natural instincts that have made it so that his size wasn't as big of a disadvantage for him in college. And now it's like, can those instincts actually translate? And the athleticism obviously translate to the NFL level. And I think that we're starting to see him put together some of those plays. He's had a couple of interceptions last week in camp. He had the first one at second year high school, then another one a couple of weeks later or a couple of days later. So, you know, I do think that he is climbing, and it's a little bit more difficult to really see, like, you know, Mike Hughes hasn't made those plays, but at the same time, I can't like say that Mike Hughes has been poor. You know, like he doesn't like stand out as some like, oh man, that's a sore spot in this defense right now. So, you know, I think it's going to be a tough battle, and I think that, you know, some of these preseason games will probably play into it. Honestly, the joint practices will play into it with how these types of guys are able to fare with all the motions that Mike McDaniel uses with those fast receivers and Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So the competition will continue, and I think that Clark Phillips is kind of putting up as good a fight as I think we all expected him to.
Talking with our buddy Joe Patrick here, breaking down the Falcons' open practice at Mercedes-Benz last night, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, when it comes to Miami next week, that offense, Joe, as we've been talking about, I mean, damn, this is going to be a real test for the defense. Do you think you've seen enough from the defensive line, the youngsters? I think our linebacking core is pretty rock solid, and we just talked about the secondary. Have you seen enough that you think they'll be at least able to get in the mix with the Miami offense?
Yeah, I mean, even last year, the reports were that it was, you know, it was competitive. You know, these practices were competitive. It wasn't like the Dolphins were blowing the Falcons out, although those are just reports. So, yeah, we'll see how things go. But, you know, when you talk about, like, the linebacker group and the defensive back group, it's interesting. And, hell, even the defensive line, I think it's fair to say that they're not, like, the most talented in terms of having star players that are the best at their positions. Well, you do have some of those guys, like a Jesse Bates. But, you know, I think it's fair to say Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata, while very good, are not, like, superstars in those positions. But overall, I feel like you have a lot of depth in these positions. Even at the linebacker spot, I think the Falcons have four linebackers that they have a lot of trust in. That includes the rookie J.D. Bertrand, who apparently is a, you know, total bookworm and is, like, picking up everything. And, you know, Raheem calls him Captain America, but he really is kind of one of those reliable do-everything linebackers that I think will have a solid role in this rotation, both this year and then going forward. And I think it's kind of the same in the defensive back group, where there are obviously some questions with how our guys like Richie Grant, DeMarco Helms, you know, they're kind of battling for that safety spot. How will they hold up against this Miami Dolphins-style offense? We just talked about the cornerback position. So while you do have some question marks, I think you have some decent depth there when you talk about all the different, you know, nickels that you have with D. Alford, Antonio Hamilton, who was a solid starter last year for the Cardinals, Kevin King, who's, you know, played a lot of minutes for the Packers in the past at the NFL level. So I think you actually have a pretty deep group in all of these rooms on the defensive side of the ball. But can Jimmy Lake make that work in a way that, you know, is able to stand up to some of the most talented guys in the sport? And again, we're going to see if that's the case when they go against Miami and play against some of the most talented guys in the sport, and Tua, Tyreek, and obviously Jalen Waddle.
Who do you think right now has the edge at slot receiver?
I think it's Ray McCloud, and I don't think it's particularly close. I know, you know, I think they have high hopes for Rondale Moore, and I think that as the season goes on, he'll probably play more and more of a role as, you know, guys kind of get hurt or banged up, or they have just, you know, maybe evolve the offense as time goes on. But it seems like just and I say this purely off of the reps that he's taking, he's almost always repping with Michael Penix. When he was throwing, like yesterday, he was basically in on that with that group with the twos. And, you know, the first day of camp when they were running through, doing like a walkthrough of a ton of plays, he was actually on the second field, again, with Penix. So I think that part of that is just trying to get Rondale as many reps as possible when you know, got basically three receivers you're rolling with the ones. But I also think that it tells you that he is kind of behind Ray-Ray McCloud for that third spot. Now, I wonder if a guy like Darnell Mooney was to get injured, like who would then, how would you then kind of fill that role? Would you use Rondale more in that role? Would you kind of shift Drake London or Kyle Pitts to try to fill that void? And then use Rondale more, like, slide him in. I'm curious to see how that rotation will evolve over the course of the season. But I would say right now, it's Ray-Ray McCloud's job. And, he's an interesting player because we haven't really seen him showcased as a wide receiver really in his career. But he does come directly from Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, as several of these players on this offense do. You talk about a couple tight ends as well. And so he has kind of a diverse background in the system and kind of knowing the scheme. And I think that hopefully this is his opportunity to take advantage of that. And I think Zach Robinson has shown a lot of creativity in how to get guys the ball in space, especially these third receivers in the screen game and all that kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing how these guys can actually produce this year.
Haven't seen a ton of special teams in practice, Joe, specifically the new kickoff rule. Do you find it odd that we haven't seen more of it? Is it something you think they're doing behind closed doors, or is it just not that important?
I actually do think that it's something that they're doing behind closed doors. I think that they're working on a lot of the special, well, specifically the kickoff return and kickoff coverage. I think they're working on a lot of that when media is not there, probably, like in the evenings or just in the classroom, kind of going over it. We have seen them do a little bit of it the first day, and Raheem Morris even said, like, they literally did it on the first day of camp, and Raheem Morris said, this is not typically a day where we would do kickoff. Usually you start with punt, and you work your way, and, like, kickoff's one, kind of one of the last things you touch on, but obviously because of the importance of the play, they wanted to get some of the basics down, so they had, the guys in their, slotted in their alignments on the new alignments for the play and everything, but they weren't really showing off anything. It was mainly just kind of taking reps for how it would typically go down. And I think even when you watched that Hall of Fame game, it was pretty standard stuff. And that might be how some of these go down, but I have to think that all these teams are going to have some sort of wrinkle to throw in there that's creative. And I think it's just really a total game of chess right now between all these special teams coaches and the teams in general of just not wanting to show their hand. Hell, even on the offensive side of the ball, like Zach Robinson said the other day, like, we're not going to show anything in preseason, which is the case. Like, that's been the case. And it just shows how preseason has changed so much, where it used to be the time where you would specifically practice the stuff that you were going to do in games. Now it's like, it's an opportunity to run the clock out without showing anything that you're actually going to do in week one. I think that applies perfectly to this new kickoff rule.
All right, Joe, before I get you out of here, wrapping up with our buddy Joe Patrick, 92.9 Falcons reporter. Let's switch hats here for a second. Alexei Marinchuk, what do you know about him? I know Garth Lagerwey had some very positive comments he made on the station here earlier this week. Is he really going to make that much of a difference for Atlanta United?
They obviously believe in him, and I'm still working on the name too, Marinchuk. I guess the emphasis is on the Ron or in the middle there. We can call him Alexi for the sake of ease. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. He comes from Atalanta, not Atlanta.
Right.
That's an Italian club that won the Europa League last year, and he was a key contributor for them, though he was not a starter. So I think that part of him wanting to make this move is probably getting, a starting role and obviously the salary that comes with that in MLS. But while he wasn't a starter, he was like the most productive substitute player basically in all of European soccer. Just like when you look at his scoring and assist numbers, like FB, the Pro Football Reference, Baseball Reference, there's one for soccer as well. And, he's in like the 99th percentile of like per minute goals, assists, all the expected numbers as well. But that's because he's having the production in these substitute roles where he's not playing the full 90 minutes. So that kind of boosts that up. But he certainly seems like a talented player, a player who can get in the box and make quick decisions while the ball's like on the fly, just like instinctive. But he's not the kind of number 10 that Thiago Almada was. I think he's going to be a little bit like, he won't be on the ball so much, and he's kind of more of a,
he is the busiest man at the radio station right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas with you until 6 o'clock. Let's waste no time and head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and welcome in Joe Patrick, fresh off of a rare night session for the Atlanta Falcons, this time at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Joe, how we doing? You get enough sleep last night?
Oh, yeah. No, last night was great. You know, it was honestly, Chris, it was great to just kind of be out there in front of the fans again. Obviously, they did the thing at Secondary High School a week ago or so, but just always really nice for there to be that kind of festive atmosphere that you expect at training camp that you normally get at Flowery Branch, but for obvious reasons that we've talked about, they weren't able to do that this year. So just, like, really special to be able to, like, from my perspective, you know, I'm at these practices where it's quote-unquote silent practices, as some of the players have called them, and then to, like, come out and see the fans respond to them and the players responding to the fans, especially afterwards. It just makes you feel good to kind of see that interaction taking place. So it was a really good night overall.
Okay, so I need your help because, as I explained in the first segment of the show, Joe, I couldn't see a damn thing yesterday because although the Maybach suite was incredible and the food and the $20 challenge, which was amazing, all the linemen were standing right in front of where we were sitting. So I was relying on the big board to watch the plays and trying to do the radio show at the same time. So give us a nice chunky rundown of what happened last night.
Yeah, Chris, you know, it's funny because I was joking with some media members saying that it was nice to actually watch a practice from the press box because not only do you get the view and everything, but you can't get blocked by the players, which they tend to do sometimes at Flowery Branch, you know, when we're standing there on the field and the linemen will get in the way. So I feel your pain there. But overall, I think it was about as entertaining of a practice as you could wish to see, especially kind of in that venue where you've got a lot of fans there, because what they were doing, they did a pretty short individual session and group session. And then they were in basically 11-on-11 scrimmage for what seemed to be a solid, like, hour and a half, I would say, last night. It was impressive just how long the practice just kept going. They kept on letting these guys run out there. And you got to see, you know, the one offense versus the two defense, then the one defense versus the two offense, and then the one offense versus the one defense. So I think you got a little bit of everything where you got to see some of the reserve guys, you know, the rookies and those types, take on, you know, some higher level competition on the other side. And then you got to see, you know, what both sides kind of have with the starting units going up against each other. And, you know, I think it's one of those deals with Kirk Cousins when he comes into this team. He's like, there's no doubt about that he's giving the defense a lot better looks, I think, preparing them. And I think the defense just preparing for a Zach Robinson offense. That really gets them ready to go, I think, better than just about anybody else. And again, when you go down to joint practices next week in Miami, you get to go against Mike McDaniel and see a lot of that similar kind of very modern, fast, you know, style of offense that seems to be dominant around the league so far. So a really productive night, I think, last night.
Yeah, and we know Tyreek Hill will be fired up because he just got his bag. We'll get more into that coming up in the next segment. But, Joe, talk to me about the cornerback battle because it seems like it's Mike Hughes' job to lose for now, but I think Clark has held up his own as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and something that I said, and I know we've talked about it, Chris, but heading into this training camp, I always thought that Clark Phillips is the kind of player where, you know, just by first glance, like literally visually, you just see how small he is, and it might get a coach kind of make them hesitant to, you know, lock him in as a starting cornerback in the NFL. But he's also the kind of player who's going to make plays over the course of training camp. And he's, you know, that's kind of his specialty when he was at Utah. Such a playmaker, such an ability to, you know, sit in those zone coverages with his eyes on the quarterback and be able to jump routes and just use his natural instincts that have made it so that his size wasn't as big of a disadvantage for him in college. And now it's like, can those instincts actually translate? And the athleticism obviously translate to the NFL level. And I think that we're starting to see him put together some of those plays. He's had a couple of interceptions last week in camp. He had the first one at Secondary High School, then another one a couple of weeks later or a couple of days later. So, you know, I do think that he is climbing. And it's a little bit more difficult to really see, like, you know, Mike Hughes hasn't made those plays. But at the same time, I can't, like, say that Mike Hughes has been poor. You know, like, he doesn't, like, stand out as some, like, oh, man, that's a sore spot in this defense right now. So, you know, I think it's going to be a tough battle, and I think that, you know, some of these preseason games will probably play into it. Honestly, the joint practices will play into it with how these types of guys are able to fare with all the motions that Mike McDaniel uses with those fast receivers in Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So the competition will continue, and I think that Clark Phillips is kind of putting up as good a fight as I think we all expected him to.
talking with our buddy Joe Patrick here, breaking down the Falcons' open practice at Mercedes-Benz last night, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, when it comes to Miami next week, that offense, Joe, as we've been talking about, I mean, damn, this is going to be a real test for the defense. Do you think you've seen enough from the defensive line, the youngsters? I think our linebacking core is pretty rock solid, and we just talked about the secondary. Have you seen enough that you think they'll be at least able to get in the mix with the Miami offense?
Yeah, I mean, even last year, the reports were that it was, you know, it was competitive. You know, these practices were competitive. It wasn't like the Dolphins were blowing the Falcons out. Although those are just reports. So, yeah, we'll see how things go. But, you know, when you talk about, like, the linebacker group and the defensive back group, it's interesting. And, hell, even the defensive line. I think it's fair to say that they're not, like, the most talented in terms of having star players that are the best at their positions. Well, you do have some of those guys, like a Jesse Bates. But, you know, I think it's fair to say Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata, while very good, are not, like, superstars at those positions. But overall, I feel like you have a lot of depth in these positions. Even at the linebacker spot, I think the Falcons have four linebackers that they have a lot of trust in. That includes the rookie J.D. Bertrand, who apparently is a total bookworm and is, like, picking up everything. And, you know, Raheem calls him Captain America, but he really is kind of one of those reliable do-everything linebackers that I think will have a solid role in this rotation, both this year and then going forward. And I think it's kind of the same in the defensive back group, where there are obviously some questions with how our guys like Richie Grant, DeMarco Helms, you know, they're kind of battling for that safety spot. How will they hold up against this Miami Dolphins-style offense? We just talked about the cornerback position. So while you do have some question marks, I think you have some decent depth there when you talk about all the different, you know, nickels that you have with D. Alford, Antonio Hamilton, who was a solid starter last year for the Cardinals, Kevin King, who's, you know, played a lot of minutes for the Packers in the past at the NFL level. So I think you actually have a pretty deep group in all of these rooms on the defensive side of the ball. But can Jimmy Lake make that work in a way that, you know, is able to stand up to some of the most talented guys in the sport? And again, we're going to see if that's the case when they go against Miami and play against some of the most talented guys in the sport, and Tua, Tyreek, and obviously Jalen Waddle.
Who do you think right now has the edge at slot receiver?
I think it's Ray McCloud, and I don't think it's particularly close. I know, you know, I think they have high hopes for Rondale Moore, and I think that as the season goes on, he'll probably play more and more of a role as, you know, guys kind of get hurt or banged up, or they have just, you know, they evolve the offense as time goes on. But it seems like just and I say this purely off of the reps that he's taking, he's almost always repping with Michael Penix when he was throwing. Like yesterday, he was basically in on that with that group with the twos. And, you know, the first day of camp when they were running through, doing like a walkthrough of a ton of plays, he was actually on the second field, again, with Penix. So I think that part of that is just trying to get Rondale as many reps as possible when you know, got basically three receivers you're rolling with the ones. But I also think that it tells you that he is kind of behind Ray McCloud for that third spot. Now, I wonder if a guy like Darnell Mooney was to get injured, like how would you then kind of fill that role? Would you use Rondale Moore in that role? Would you kind of shift Drake London or Kyle Pitts to try to fill that void? And then use Rondale Moore, like, you know, slide him in. I'm curious to see how that rotation will evolve over the course of the season. But I would say right now it's Ray McCloud's job. And, you know, he's an interesting player because we haven't really seen him showcased as a wide receiver really in his career. But he does come directly from Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, as several of these players on this offense do. You talk about a couple tight ends as well. And so he has kind of a diverse background in the system and kind of knowing the scheme. And I think that hopefully this is his opportunity to take advantage of that. And I think Zach Robinson has shown a lot of creativity in how to get guys the ball in space, especially these third receivers in the screen game and all that kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing how these guys can actually produce this year.
Haven't seen a ton of special teams in practice, Joe, specifically the new kickoff rule. Do you find it odd that we haven't seen more of it? Is it something you think they're doing behind closed doors, or is it just not that important?
I actually do think that it's something that they're doing behind closed doors. I think that they're working on a lot of the special, well, specifically the kickoff return and kickoff coverage. I think they're working on a lot of that when media is not there, probably, you know, like in the evenings or just in the classroom kind of going over it. we have seen them do a little bit of it the first day. And Raheem Morris even said, like, they literally did it on the first day of camp. And Raheem Morris said, you know, this is not typically a day where we would do kickoff. Usually you start with punt and you work your way, and like kickoff's kind of one of the last things you touch on. But obviously because of the importance of the play, they wanted to get some of the basics down. So they had, you know, the guys in their, slotted in their alignments on the new alignments for the play and everything, but they weren't really showing off anything. It was mainly just kind of taking reps for how it would typically go down. And I think even when you watching that Hall of Fame game, it was pretty standard stuff. And that might be how some of these go down, but I have to think that all these teams are going to have some sort of wrinkle to throw in there that's creative. And I think it's just really a total game of chess right now between all these special teams coaches and the teams in general just not wanting to show their hand. Hell, even on the offensive side of the ball, like Zach Robinson said the other day, like, we're not going to show anything in preseason, which is the case. Like, that's been the case. And it just shows how preseason has changed so much, where it used to be the time where you would specifically practice the stuff that you were going to do in games. Now it's like it's an opportunity to run the clock out without showing anything that you're actually going to do in week one. I think that applies perfectly to this new kickoff rule.
All right, Joe, before I get you out of here, wrapping up with our buddy Joe Patrick, 92.9 Falcons reporter. Let's switch hats here for a second. Alexi Marenchuk, what do you know about him? I know Garth Lagerwey had some very positive comments he made on the station here earlier this week. Is he really going to make that much of a difference for Atlanta United?
They obviously believe in him, and I'm still working on the name too, Marenchuk. I guess the emphasis is on the Ron or in the middle there. We can call him Alexi for the sake of ease. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. He comes from Atalanta, not Atlanta.
Right.
That's an Italian club that won the Europa League last year, and he was a key contributor for them, though he was not a starter. So I think that part of him wanting to make this move is probably getting, you know, a starting role and obviously the salary that comes with that in MLS. But while he wasn't a starter, he was like the most productive substitute player basically in all of European soccer. Just like when you look at his scoring and assist numbers, like FB, the you know, Pro Football Reference, Baseball Reference, there's one for soccer as well. And, you know, he's in like the 99th percentile of like per minute goals, assists, all the expected numbers as well. But that's because he's having the production in these substitute roles where he's not playing the full 90 minutes. So that kind of boosts that up. But he certainly seems like a talented player, a player who can get in the box and make quick decisions while the ball's like on the fly, just like instinctive. But he's not the kind of number 10 that Thiago Almada was. I think he's going to be a little bit like, he won't be on the ball so much. And he's kind of more of a shadow striker and a guy who can come off the wing and just, yeah, try to finish goals, create goals, and just generally add dynamism to this Atlanta United attack that desperately needs it.
All right, their next match coming up. It's an important one. They need to, if I'm remembering correctly, Joe, they can't afford to bring this one to PKs, right, in order to advance?
That's correct. Yeah, they got to win this one in regular time and, for the League Cup, or else they go out. And if they do go out, then it's probably not the worst thing in the world. But I know that obviously this team needs to get any positive momentum it can going. And it's going to be still a hard pass for them. They're not going to have Alexi Marenchuk for this game. They're still sorting. They have to wait and sort out his visa issues. But, yeah, they play Santos Laguna, a team in Mexico. They're a beatable team for sure, and especially these Mexican teams are coming off of their off season, so they're not in as much of a rhythm as the MLS clubs. But having said that, Atlanta United hasn't been able to find a rhythm really all season. It seems like every time they take a step forward, they take a step back, if not two. So their last step was a step back. So let's see if they can, you know, take that step forward and put in one of the performances like they did when they surprisingly beat, you know, last year's MLS Cup winners in the Columbus Crew just a few weeks ago. Now they've got a lot of their guys healthy and back, especially on that defensive line.
Real quick, how are both of our squads doing in the Olympics, soccer-wise?
The women are doing great. They seem to be like a totally rejuvenated team under a new head coach in Emma Hayes. So that's great to see. They've also just got like a refreshed, essential core of players that are playing for them, like new captains, they seem refreshed in a really good way, a really positive way. Trinity Rodman, daughter of Dennis Rodman, is one of the leading scorers for that team. So great to see all them doing well. The men got knocked out yesterday to Morocco, which is they're a very good team and have some world class players on that side. But still, they got absolutely destroyed 4-0, and disappointing to see them go out like that. Having said that, it's the most Olympic success probably they've ever had, if at least the most they've had in at least 20 years. So at least you got that, and it's a, basically a youth squad. So we'll see how many of these players from that squad actually kind of graduate and move into the senior team where they can really make an impact in some of the bigger competitions like the World Cup and Copa America in the years to come.
All right, Joe, I will see you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on Monday morning, my friend.
Yes, sir. We're back.
All right. We'll talk to you then. Our buddy Joe Patrick there on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back at Flowery Branch on Monday. Practice scheduled from 9:30 to 11, and then we shall see which player we get for Dukes and Bell. All right, coming up next, Kirk Cousins told us how his ankle's doing. Arthur Blank spoke. Drake London spoke. Jimmy Lake spoke. And they all had very, very interesting things to say. What did Kirk say his ankle is? I'll let you hear that next as we hit an NFL soundcheck. Don't go anywhere. 1 hour in the books. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.